going to do is prevent having a problem further down the coast.
NOAA and Exxon are both following that oil as it moves out of Montague Straits. It's heading in a westerly to southwesterly direction. It's as of yesterday, it was already beginning to windrow or break up into streaks. There's some evidence that it's breaking further. The closest to land, I just spoke to a NOAA gentleman, and who came back from an overflight, and he said the closest to land is about 5 miles. So it is heading offshore. The wind for the next 2 days is predicted to continue blowing offshore. I've learned not to trust that. So we asked for permission last night from the Coast Guard to attempt some aerial spraying out here beyond Montague in this area as it was heading out. We had one run this afternoon, and as you might expect, it was not a total success, but we are reducing the amount of oil that is going out. Last thing we need is more coastline to clean up. Let me talk a little bit about what is going on. Here in the Sound, I understand everybody's frustration and impatience to get this oil along the shoreline cleaned up, to get the concentrations of oil out of the bays and inlets where a lot of it is trapped. We are working the trapped oil on a water surface just about as vigorously as we can. Our strategy is to trap as much of it in those bays and inlets. We don't want it to continue to trail out. So we're continuing to put boom as it becomes available to us, and to begin different techniques to get the heavy concentrations of oil scooped up. Let me give you an update on logistics. I think as of midnight last night, we were up to 41 or 42 aircraft. Let me read what the note says. 49 cargo jets as of midnight last night. We have over 100 vessels in the Exxon Navy. We've got 111,000 feet of boom deployed. That's over 20 miles of boom. That's a lot of boom. There probably was never a concentration like that in the world. But quite frankly, if I ever had time to count up the coastline, it's probably 1,000 miles. So if you look at 20 miles of boom and can't find it, not impressed by it, the magnitude of the shoreline is enormous. We have 20,000 feet. I'm sorry, we have another 36,000 feet in Valdez being in different stages of deployment. We also have another 20,000 feet of Navy sea curtain boom. It's very heavy, 36-inch boom, and that's being flown up to Valdez, and we're bringing that in to help the defense at Sawmill Bay. We are fairly easy at this point, but far from complacent. We have to do more at Sawmill Bay, and we'll continue to do that. We have 12 skimmers deployed. These are heavy oil skimmers. The normal skimmers used at terminals are no help to us now. The moose is almost like an axle grease at this point. So we do need heavy oil skimmers. We've got 12 in the field. We got 5 in the Valdez area, 5 more in the Valdez area being readied for deployment. You know, these come air transportable. When we get them out, we have to put them all together. It's kind of like an erector set. So that's what we're doing. We have 12 more being shipped to Valdez.
I think the Soviets have offered them.
Yes, there was an offer for a Soviet skimmer. We took a look at it and don't feel that it's suitable for what we're really tackling now. I don't know too much more detail about it other than just a word. Don, you got it. We announced this, we're taking a further detailed look. We got some more specifications for it. We've also talked to the French. They have some heavy oil skimmers. We've requested that they make at least one of their, I believe they have three. We've requested they make one available to us, and I think that request is being considered.
How about the Navy skimmers?
We've got so many Navy skimmers, Coast Guard skimmers. We have five skimmers en route from the Canadian Coast Guard. We've got five Navy skimmers that I believe should be already in Valdez. Maybe that's the five you mean. Three of those are going to the terminal because we stripped out the skimmers from the terminal. So of those five Navy Marco skimmers, three are going to the terminal and two are going down to Sawmill Bay. We've got
announced the formation of the Fisherman Strike Force to help the cleanup. Do you think his announcements and actions show any loss of confidence in your effort?
Well, I understand anybody being impatient. We are impatient too. But it's the process of getting the equipment here, deploying it, building a logistics system. This is, in many respects, a very, very tough situation. You know, the closest island is 6 hours away, and when you get down to Sawmill Bay in the Latouche area, where most of our resources are right now, it's over 10 hours. So that's a real problem for us, but we are ramping up fast, and I'll tell you a little bit more about it. Before I do, the Exxon Air Force is still 14 aircraft. Should be 15 because we got one more in today.
Mr. Irazi?
Yeah, yes, sir.
We've heard numerous times to we during describing the operation, but in fact, aren't a number of these operations under the direction of DEC personnel?
We are taking all the help we can get, and we have no pride of who's doing what. It's a very, very heavily coordinated effort. We have one steering committee and one operations coordination committee, and we have at least five subcommittees in operation now. And on each one of those committees, we have representatives from the steering committee is only three of us, ADEC, the Coast Guard, and Exxon. The operations committee, I think, is now up to about 9 or 10 agencies. The one subcommittee that's looking at planning the shoreline cleanup is 10 agencies. So there are a lot of folks involved. We're spending a lot of time coordinating all of our efforts. We have a lot of people from Cordova and the other fishing groups involved in this. I think about 85 about 50 of those 100 or so vessels or fishing vessels. They're all operating under Exxon contract and Exxon control, whether it's AEC, ADEC coordinated, you can call it the way it is. Everybody's trying to work this thing together.
Today our photographer was out there and he said he saw some guys on Naked Island washing some rocks and throwing them back into the ocean and into the sound, and then we presume that when the oil shifts the island will be covered again. Isn't this truly the great myth of Sisyphus? I mean, can you possibly continue this kind of an effort? It seems hopeless.
Oh, let me answer. It's not hopeless. What we have to do, you know, what's going on right now is a little learning on our base and a little responding to pressure to put somebody out there. It's not the right thing to do. In no way. What the right thing to do is what's going to start tomorrow. And let me just go through that. What we call the Exxon Command and Communications vessel sailed last night. That's the Crystal Star. We put aboard it a mobile van that we had constructed for us about 5 years ago. That van has a couple command rooms in it and then just a whole array of communications. And we could pick up those little walkie-talkies and talk to that van, even though it's way down at Sawmill Bay. I was supposed to bring one and demonstrate it, but I forgot. I'll do that tomorrow. But finally, we have very good communications from our operations center to the vessel. The vessel, in turn, has very good communications center with all of the other vessels that are out there. That's something we have not had up to now.
Are the skimmers now effective? You have effective skimmers out there now?
The skimmers that are out there now are doing their job. We need more of them, and they're coming. But we got to recognize that it's a lot of oil for any skimming operation. So it's going to be slow. Crystal Star is the first vessel we put out there. We will have our second major vessel, which is the Arctic Salvor. That vessel is going to sail tonight, and it's going to become the major support vessel. The strategy is to clean all of those islands, starting from the northern end and working south. And Naked Island will be our first. We're going to start north, work south. We've got the Crystal Star, which is our command vessel, and it'll be controlling all the operations. We've got the Arctic Salvor, which is a large vessel. It's fitted out with a big machine shop, and as someone said, in the past 2 days, we've turned it into the biggest floating shopping mall in the world, probably. But we have all of our different types of supplies and equipment on that vessel. We have the first of our what I'll call floating hotels. It's a 56-man berthing vessel. It'll sail tomorrow, and it will support a team of 50 to 55 people. It'll provide berthing, feeding. It's got a hospital for medical treatment. It's got a helipad. The Arctic Salvor has a helipad also. The Arctic Salvor will be out there to refuel the boats. It'll repair any of the equipment that needs to be repaired. It has a large crane on it. We'll have a second berthing barge in operation later this week, and there's two more that hopefully by the end of this week or early next week will be in place. And altogether, that will support close to 300 people. And that's going to be our field people, and that flotilla will start north and move south. Ahead of that is going to go this booming and skimming operation, taking the oil that's on the surface off and skimming that, and then we'll begin to work along the shoreline. If you've been out there, you know that there's hundreds and hundreds of miles of shoreline. Some of it is only exposed at low tide, so we're going to have to be bringing people on to work and then getting them off before the next high tide. It's going to be a slow process. We intend to be here a while, and we intend not to leave until the job's done. I mentioned that there are 93 Exxon people here, the first responders, if I can call them that, numbered about 50 people. We now have the second group of Exxon people coming in. They're doing two things. This is such an enormous job that they're filling, doubling up in some positions in the first responder group. They're also beginning to relieve a few of the people that do need to get back to their real-life jobs. None of these folks are full-time responders in that sense. There's a third group coming in. They will start tomorrow night. Five of them will arrive, and this is the first party that will become the longer-term representatives and managers of this effort. They've been told to come up here, ready to be here for 6 months or longer. They're going to be going into a two-story office building. In fact, we're going to move the whole operation to that building when we got all the communications in it. So we have a longer-term home. I hate to use the word permanent because I don't want to think in those sort of terms. But we're going to be here a long time. We have a lot of work to do. And we intend to leave Prince William Sound as close to what it was before the tragedy. understand the problems, and we're here to get it back to the best condition we can, and hopefully everyone will be satisfied. We'll make sure everyone's satisfied before we leave.
Got a cost on all this mounting of this flotilla, et cetera?
It's enormous. I mean, somebody's counting, but I'm not.
It was 1,000 miles of shoreline.
I'm just guessing. It's probably way less than that, but it looks like 1,000 miles. I don't know.
Is it physically possible for
5 miles? I was just told it's more than 1,000 miles.
Allow us to shift to Joseph.
Pardon?
Is it physically possible for 300 people to clean up that much shoreline?
Well, we don't intend to stop at 300 people. That's just the berthing we have on site for that for right now. But if it takes more people, we'll get more berthing barges together.
Are you making the survey?
Yeah, we have no limitation on numbers.
Are you making conducting the surveys to determine how many dead birds there are out there?
We are assisting Dr. Davis and his activity, and we're doing surveys. We're not bringing in counts of birds.
Do you intend to at all?
I don't know. You know, there's so many activities going on right now.
When the cleanup workers come across...
And we're doing surveys. We're not bringing in counts of birds.
Do you intend to at all?
I don't know. You know, there's so many activities going on right now.
When the cleanup workers come across a dead bird or a dead animal, what are their orders? What do they do with this?
Would you like to answer? We've been asked to remove them from the beach. The problem is that the eagles are eating them, and that only creates more problems. So we've been asked to remove any birds that we do find as we get into the beach cleanup. But recognize right now we're only in two small areas.
Who asked you to do that, and where do you take them?
That request came from the science committee.
The science committee
of this multi-agency. Could you help me on that?
Are they going to... there's a storage place here in town for them, and they're being frozen.
Can I ask one more question? Do your workers or any employees of Exxon, have they been given orders not to talk about the spill, about the cleanup?
None whatsoever. You know, most of these folks are people with that. In fact, I'd say of the 300 people, we don't know any of them. They just come to us through a contractor. What we're concerned about is their safety, so we need to give them some kind of instruction on safety, the health of what they're doing, and we're just gearing up to do that. We don't want to put anybody in the field until we've made sure they understand the risks and that we're doing everything we can to keep this from getting any more of a tragedy. We have no injury. Well, we have one fishing boat operator injured slightly. I think it was just a couple scratches. He's back out there. But we've been very, very fortunate so far that we haven't had anybody hurt. We are concerned about some of these shorelines because it's very treacherous. As you know, some of it is almost cliff face. So we got to do this very, very carefully.
Sir, how much oil have you picked up as of today?
I don't know that. It's spread around in bladders and in tanks and barges, and we don't have an accurate count. We're just picking it up as fast as we can at this point.
Mr. Hazelwood was charged, as you know, with misdemeanors. And I was wondering if you have any new thoughts on that. And also, do you know where he is and how much did he make when he was a tanker captain?
He, of course, once the results of the alcohol tests were disclosed to us, we fired him because it's against company policy to be drinking at all or any alcohol on board. We took him off the vessel Saturday and replaced him with two masters Saturday night. Sunday, the MTSB folks were here, and we advised him he needed counsel, and then we made him and his counsel available to the NTSB. We relieved him of all of his duties. Right now, I don't know where he is. I'd sure like to ask him about 1,000 questions, but...
How much do you make?
Are you confident?
I'm guessing that his salary is probably in excess of $90,000 a year. He works 6 months a year and has 6 months off. He works six... The sea tour is 60 days, and then they get 60 days off, and then they come back for 60 days.
How confident are you of the structural integrity of that vessel during the high and low tide next week?
There are at least four different, five different naval sets of naval architecture eyes looking at that. There's the Exxon staff. There is our principal, Salvor, who's a very experienced individual. He has his naval architect. Schmidt Towing is doing a double check for us. So that's three of our own eyes. It's all been coordinated with the American Bureau of Shipping, which is making their own assessment. And then the final review tomorrow will be with the Coast Guard in Washington, and they'll be making their assessment.
Who's that, Ross? How confident are you at this point? You don't know? Is that it?
I didn't say that at all. There are two things you need to consider. The first is the buoyancy or stability of the vessel to make sure that she, when she floats, she will be upright. We are very confident that she will float and will float upright. That is, will not capsize when she comes off. We are very confident that in Prince William Sound, she is structurally safe. What we don't know is when we bring her out into the Gulf of Alaska, does she have the proper structural integrity? And the only way we're going to find that out is through that detailed survey. So the answer is yes on buoyancy, yes on structural integrity in Prince William Sound, to be determined in Gulf of Alaska.
What is your best estimate now as to the first day you might attempt to refloat her?
We have the right tidal conditions from Wednesday to Friday. We will start the process on Wednesday. The first appropriate tide is about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. We're going to go at this very slowly and very methodically. If she doesn't come up on that tide, we'll have four or five more over the next 3 days. It's not something that we could schedule or say it will come up at this point in time. Actually, the floating is going to be very, very unspectacular. And from the air, you won't even know the point that she floats. The first visible point is when the tugs move it off the reef. And we're going to leave her in that position, changing the air pressure in the tanks until we have it stable. And we'll then tow it, the salvage chief and the other tugs will then tow it over to outside bay.
I'd like to know the details of the repair work. I understand that the permanent repair work, I understand it will be done in Portland. The cost of that work, any particular troubles that you anticipate towing it up through the Columbia River, and the length of time that you expect those repairs to take?
We're just in the very, very early stages of that, but let me try to respond to it. We are talking to the shipyard organizations in Portland. There are three of them. It's a very big job, and one of the problems is that we will tie up a dry dock for a number of months, but the way we plan to accomplish that would be a series of movements in and out of the dry dock so that we don't tie it up for a considerable amount of time. Obviously, everyone would have a concern for any trailing oil from the vessel, so we have to make sure that we have taken care of that. But we are just in the very preliminary discussions, and we really have no assessment. Of the cost at this point. We do know that there are at least three large openings in the hull, and considerable cracking. One of the things we'll have to do in Outer Bay is to drill each of those cracks in the hull to make sure it doesn't progress any further. And that'll be done out in Outside Bay, and we have local divers, and they're getting help, so it'll be a big job. Any other question in the back, sir?
Yes, sir, Mr. Ayara. So you mentioned that your concerns of having your new employees navigating the beach areas with the tidal interface and the cliffs and such. Do you think that Exxon will be receptive to coordinating some of the existing search and rescue and Alaska-based orientation to guide your people in this rather than just coordinating through your own company structure?
Oh, we have an awful lot of local help right now. We're getting a lot of advice from the fishermen on weather conditions, current conditions, and they'll be working right along with us.
So in the ongoing cleanup procedure that you're talking about, working down the islands and on the beaches over the next 6 months, will those kind of local structures be part of how your team operates to minimize their health risks and to maximize their effectiveness?
Absolutely. Some of these subcommittees that have been put together, there are five subcommittees put together for beach cleanup. And four of those subcommittees will continue ongoing through the process, checking, daily or weekly. I don't know what their schedule will be. And then the final one is the Restoration Assessment Committee. And they'll come through and decide, make the definition of how clean is clean. Always a tough one, but all of that is already in place.
Thank you.
Mr. Ryan, and we'll continue. Yes, sir.
Yesterday, the governor made some remarks about the possibility of closing the pipeline because of unpreparedness on Alyeska's part, by and large.
I really can't comment. The last 10 days, I've been so focused on this thing, I'm not sure I know whether there's a world beyond this response.
You own 20% of the pipeline. You own 2% of Prudhoe Bay oil and even more oil in Lisburn and some other fields. And the state has said that you started out playing catch-up. I'm wondering if you feel that Alyeska Pipeline Service Company failed to launch an appropriate cleanup.
I'm not sure there was anything more that could be done. I think there's a lot of reassessment that's going to go on beyond that at this point. I am so focused on cleanup, I really can't think beyond that.
Mr. Yes, Ryan, sir. Realizing there are different kinds of beaches, are you going to do anything?
Let me just say, I used to use the word beach until about 2 days ago. Somebody shook me and said, there is no beach out there, fella. Look down from that helicopter. We call it shoreline now.
Realizing there are different kinds of shoreline within Prince William Sound, are you going to do any kind of a control group study to see perhaps how long it takes 100 people to clean 1 mile of beach, and then maybe the public and Exxon can have a better, more realistic idea of how long it will take to clean all the beaches?
We certainly are going to, we're going to learn as we go, and we're going to be making a lot of assessments in the early stages of this. And we'll certainly be, for our own purposes, trying to understand how long this activity will take. But right now, we're not anywhere near there.
How is it exactly done?
Do people actually do have to scrub rocks physically, do they?
We are going to be polishing rocks.
What will be the role at the salvage? Do they have a role, or what's their function here?
We have a salvage master that came up from Seattle, I believe. He's very experienced in salvage in this area, and he's our principal contact. We have two people that I know of from Smith, and they also have mobilized some equipment in Anchorage. We told them to bring their equipment as far as Anchorage, so we have a lot of their equipment staged in Anchorage. If we decide we need more, then it's coming up with the salvage chief.
So you decided to do it by yourself first?
The gentleman that we've contracted to help us is not an Exxon employee. We have four Exxon people working with him, but he is our principal salver at this point.
Mr. Arrasi.
But we have backup.
We certainly have Smith and the Wings if we need help.
Mr. Iorossi, please.
We have been told that the lightering operation would be finished by today, and now it appears that it has been pushed back about 24 hours. What's the reason for that?
We got off the number of barrels that we expected, 943,000, on a time basis. But what has happened to us as we got into those damaged tanks, as we began to bring that oil layer down, we began to get a lot of oily water mixture. We had hoped to have 950,000 barrels of oil off. At this point, we actually have 943,000 barrels, but 60 of it is an oil water mixture. So we still have 60,000 barrels on board the ship. We're going to clean that up with the Baytown and skim as much of those tanks as possible.
You're pulling more water up than you expected to.
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Of the recovered oil, approximately what percent can be saved and be used? In other words, what percent becomes waste, and where does that get dumped?
Well, the 880,000 barrels of pure oil is really untouched. It has little to no water content. The 63,000 barrels of oily water, as those two vessels head for California, the natural decanting process will go on, and I assume we'll recover almost all of the oil that's in that water, in that mixture, by the time they get to California. Now, what's left, and of what's left on a ship is about 60,000-70,000 barrels of pure oil. That'll be recovered. But we've got another 60,000 or so that's mixed in with 600,000 barrels of oil, and we may end up carrying out to Portland.
The stuff coming off the water is of no value?
No. I had a sample last night, and the fellow figured I needed the joke, so he handed me this container and dumped it like that, and it just was like molasses. So it came out. Now, he took it from, he said, the heaviest concentration in the stream. So there's a lot of oil that's still sheen stuff, but that stream of brown mousse that you see, boy, that is really tough stuff. It's coming up our skimmers, and that's why we need the heavy fuel type of skimmer.
What do you do with that?
Right now we're collecting it in bladders and barges. We have two barges out there. I don't know how we're going to do that with barges. Probably a solvent process.
And retreatment.
Or an attempt to retreat it.
And then what?
But there's a whole study going on as to what we do with it.
Could you show which pieces of beach you're cleaning?
Pardon?
Could you show which pieces of beach you're cleaning?
Yeah, we have two. Today we had two work teams out, about 100 people in total. We had a native Alaskan group that was working in this area. It's called Irish Cove. These folks live in this area here, and we contracted with them to begin the cleanup work here. We're also working on this face of Naked Island, but I would tell you these are minimal efforts, and this is not how we plan to continue at all.
Mr. Iorossi,
yes.
Just a moment ago you said, I'm not sure that much more could have been done. Yet if you go back and look at the record, for 20 years, the oil industry has assured the people of Alaska that if a major spill came, they would be able to deal with it. How do you reconcile those two things?
Well, we're dealing with a real catastrophe here. Even in Alaska's response plan, they have a 200,000 barrel spill scenario, and their whole plan is to hit it with dispersant just as fast as you can. And that's a spill of that magnitude. You really got to move everything you can. I'm going to take one more question. That fellow right there.
Mr. Iorossi, in a follow-up to that, so my understanding now that as this oil is moving out of Elrington entrance and down into the Gulf, and it's clearly kind of in a larger area, but right now we're going to begin to see significant schools of herring popping up. And are there dispersants being used down in those areas? And if so, it's my understanding there was a protocol that there would be approved herring spotters on those aircraft to differentiate between schools of herring and oil. So I guess that's two questions.
Well, the The test run that was done today, there was a Coast Guard observer, the on-scene commander, Commander McCall, was in the aircraft with our two spotters, and they were working in this area here.
I guess what I'm asking is that
if we need Harry spotters, we'll have them.
So okay.
That gentleman next to you will tell you that there isn't anything he has asked for or anybody else, and we haven't said yet.
Great, thank you. Thank you very much.
He's been an absolute help to us. And all those folks are ready to meet you the first day, but I get a lot of smiles right now. It doesn't mean we're very apologetic for the problem, but boy, we're doing everything we can.
Well, I think we need to address the question of the contamination of the vessel. I really don't think you should leave without addressing that.
Okay, let me get it. I never got the question. Contamination of the vessel.
How clean is it going to be when it's moved to Naked Island? And how will it be clean?
It is, we're going to get as much of that 12 to 24 inch layer off. But remember, that layer is sitting 32 feet above the damage. What we believe that when we first move the vessel, we are going to get some oil that's now trapped in the bottom. The bottom of that vessel has a tunnel in it, as I understand, about 10 feet wide that you can drive a car through, and there is some oil entrapped in the top of that. So as we move it, they will probably get some oil. We're going to have the whole area boomed, and we can't boom the ship, but what you do in a circumstance like this is boom downwind of it and then put skimmers inside. So we expect there will be some oil released as we move the vessel, and we'll have a careful plan to trap it and skim it.
Will it be actually washed inside before it's moved, or you just want to get it over there as quick as you can?
No, we'll probably be doing some washing there. We haven't made that decision, or we'll wait till we get out to sea.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you all very much. I'd just like to mention one thing for the ones of you who may not have seen it. The Alyeska oil spill contingency plan at page 3-54 has about 4 or 5 pages that covers this 200,000 barrel spill scenario that Frank mentioned, and we have copies of it if you don't have access to it, and be happy to make those available to you. Thank you very much. See you tomorrow at 11.
Following the final statements, answer his question about contamination of the vessel itself and whether it would be cleaned before it would be moved. By Chair Frank Irasi, President of Exxon Shipping, Don Cornett closed off the conference. We have been told that tomorrow we expect another press conference at 11 o'clock. Future conferences evidently will be held here at the Valdez City Council Chambers rather than at the Civic Center Ballroom, where for the first 9 days of this event, all of the conferences were held. We heard from several people this afternoon. Nancy Lethko, a spokesman for the Prince William Sound Conservation Alliance, who made a brief statement, among other things, distancing that particular organization, the local environmental conservation organization, from some of the tactics, I guess, of the other activist organizations that have been here, and making a plea for working together and remembering the problem that we have, and asking for work or cooperation in cleaning it up. We heard from Alice Berkner about the status of the bird cleaning operation. Evidently, some of the first birds to be cleaned, rehabilitated, and released were released this afternoon. We also heard quite a bit from Dr. Randall Davis, who we haven't had a shot at very many times, talking about the mammal rescue. Dr. Davis looking quite moved, speaking about the plans to work with the otters. Evidently, 30 otters have been delivered to the Mammal Cleaning Center, Rescue and Cleaning Center so far, and 11 of those did die. 17 are left. There will be plans to move some of the surviving otters to aquariums on the West Coast to be held until the final disposition of the animals is made by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. One point Dr. Davis made was that they'd be happy if they had a 60% recovery rate of the otters that are brought in. We then moved on to Frank Irasi, who's the president of Exxon Shipping, and he gave the status. Again, with figures much more readily covered by print media than broadcast journalists, long list of numbers of boats and personnel, where people are. The bottom line being the response force is growing day by day. The Valdez Airport still seeing a tremendous air traffic, not only with people moving from Valdez out to the scene and back, but with more and more equipment and personnel arriving on a daily basis. Of the estimated million barrels of oil left on board the Exxon Valdez after the grounding and subsequent stabilization of the vessel, some 943,000 barrels have been transferred to other vessels, the Exxon Baton Rouge, the Exxon San Francisco. As of this afternoon, the Exxon Baytown is moving alongside to pick up the remaining oil. Of the 943,000 barrels of liquid recovered in the lightering operation, 880,000 are pure oil, and some 63,000 barrels are oily mixture, oil and water mixed. They're estimating there's about 120,000 barrels of liquid still on board the Exxon Valdez in compartments that they will attempt to drain. Half of that is pure, about 60 to 70,000 barrels of oil. The other is about a 12-inch to 24-inch layer of oil on top of seawater in the ruptured tanks. 88 to 90% of the oil that remained on board the Exxon Valdez has been moved off that vessel. From Frank Arasi, we heard confirmation of the refloating plan. They will be submitting a specific plan to the Coast Guard for approval on Monday. The vessel is planned, they're planning to move it to Outside Bay, which is on the southwest corner of Naked Island in Prince William Sound. Naked Island, the first island impacted. We heard a lot of talk about the Exxon Navy, over 100 vessels, 20 miles of boom, 15 aircraft, and the discussion of the arrival of some specialized vessels, the Crystal Star, which will be an Exxon Command and Control Center, and the Arctic Salvor, which will be a major support vessel with fuel, supplies, housing, and equipment for a large team of personnel. There'll be several berthing barges where personnel can be housed on board vessels at sea. These will be the key vessels in what will be the beach cleaning operation once the oil that is on the water has either come ashore or moved out, been recovered, or moved out into the Gulf of Alaska. At that time, the effort will be to start on the northernmost of the islands affected in the sound, Naked Island, work that island and or anchor this fleet around it, and move southward along both sides of the Naked Island, Night Island chain, east and west, moving toward the south, toward Montague Strait. There is oil moving out through Montague Strait into the Gulf of Alaska. There was a test today of dispersants. Even though the oil is 10 days in the water, there was a test of dispersants delivered by airborne means to the water out in the Gulf of Alaska. The attempt is to see if it's possible at all to disperse the oil moving out into the ocean currents to prevent their going on shore in the Seward, Kenai Fjords area, or perhaps moving off into Cook Inlet. A number of Navy pieces of there's Coast Guard skimmers from the Canadians. There's U.S. Coast Guard equipment still on the way. There's even more Navy skimmers on the way. The specialized equipment needed now is to move heavy, the skimmers specialized that are able to remove heavy oil from seawater. Those are on the way. Many are unseen now. The effort still continues. Exxon organizing itself. They're anticipating that their long-term crews are beginning to be some replacement of personnel now, the people who were immediately put on planes and hustled here from all points of the globe now being replaced by personnel who will be expect to be here for, have been told to expect to be in Valdez for as long as 6 months. Exxon's taking over one of the, an office building in town, will be moving out of the hotel into more permanent offices, although Exxon shipping president Frank Arasi said he didn't want to use the word permanent, but it's going to be at least 6 months, half a year, they anticipate, before their cleanup operation will be mobilizing to move out of the Valdez Prince William Sound area. Those were the high points of the press conference today. This press conference sponsored by Exxon. I want to thank KCHU volunteer Tricia King for her work here. Also, technician Chris Bedalek from the Alaska Public Radio Network. Engineering this broadcast at KCHU Studios has been Mary Beth Joyce. This has been a special, a combined broadcast of KCHU Radio and KVAK Radio in Valdez. And through the facilities and services of these stations, the Alaska Public Radio Network and Alascom, this broadcast is made available to Alaska Public Radio Network stations, other Alaska stations, and ABC Radio News. We'll be back at 11 o'clock tomorrow with the next Exxon briefing from here in the Valdez City Council chambers. I'm Dave Hammack, and this is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.